So we have been discussing for the last number of weeks, and we're only going to do it for a couple more weeks. We're going to change topics soon, but it's just kind of a fun, interesting thing to discuss. The concept of the world to come, the afterlife, the messianic period in Jewish thought, because it's something that people have a lot of questions about, and there's a lot of different opinions about, and it's also interesting and something that's on people's minds, seems like, especially lately. So we discussed many different aspects of different opinions amongst the rabbis about the Jewish approach to heaven and afterlife and the soul and things like that. And one of the things we talk about a lot in Jewish tradition, I mean, we don't talk about it a lot, but is definitely a part of Jewish belief, is the belief in a messianic era and an actual person who is the Messiah. And I mean, obviously, this has been something that's been debated for thousands of years now. So one of the issues within that that I thought it'd be fun to talk about, just because it's often mentioned, I think maybe sometimes misunderstood, and in a few generations from now, if the Messiah hasn't come yet, it will be especially important to have discussed. So hopefully, you know, you'll remember what we talk about here today, and you'll tell your great-grandchildren, as you know. And that is this belief that you might have heard many, many times, that the Messiah will come by the year 6000. Now, remember, anyone remember what's the year right now? 5784. Yeah, 5784. According to the Jewish calendar, we're in 5784. Of course, there's many different calendars in the world, but the Jewish calendar, 5784. From anyone know what that's counting from? Just by the way.
The last day of creation.
Yeah, basically, we're counting from the creation of Adam and Eve, creation of humanity, because this doesn't necessarily mean, just as a quick side point, that this is, I mean, I don't want to say something a little bit controversial. The traditional belief is that, yeah, the world is 5,784 years old because Adam was just 6 days. So, okay, it's just 6 days. But there are those who also are of the opinion that actually Adam being born on the sixth day is actually like 15 billion years after the first day because of how time moves. And how maybe time has been slowing down. Let's say, for example, the first day might have been something like 8 billion years. And the second day, 4 billion. And then the third day, 2 billion. Whatever it might be, there's a lot of ways to look at it, that there's a whole evolutionary process described in the beginning of the Torah. And that Adam was, we count creation, we count humanity as being what we count the world from. But it doesn't necessarily mean the world is actually 7,784 years old. But anyways, that's a side point. But there's this belief, this tradition, that it's only going to 6,000. Not necessarily that the world will end after 6,000, though that's one possibility that we're going to see right now, or that the world as we know it will end after 6,000 years, or just that it will begin the messianic period, which is another. So I'll read to you now where the tradition comes from. I have it on the sheet here on 589 at the top of the page, but I realized that that's a quote from the Talmud in Sanhedrin, page 97a, but that I only have the end of the quote there. And I thought it's more important. It's important to get the whole quote. So I just now printed it out before. I don't have it on the sheet though there for you. But so I'll read to you, and then we'll pick up together. But here's what the Talmud says, starting from the beginning of the quote before you have it on the sheet there. It says, "Amar of Katina, Shis Alfei Shnei Havu Alma. The world will last." That's actually Aramaic. The world will last for 6,000 years. Vechad Charuv, and then 1,000 years it will be destroyed. I don't know, it's probably, you know, too fanciful and abstract. I can't imagine the world getting destroyed, right? That couldn't happen. What? Okay, right. Well, there's that possibility. There's also the possibility that we'll do it to ourselves, which I actually, there is one opinion, we're not going to this now, but there's one opinion that the messianic period will begin when humanity develops the ability to destroy itself, and that will be, there's something, okay. So that's, I mean, so you can imagine, it's not so far-fetched. I think probably people read this 2,000 years ago, like, the world will be destroyed? Like, what does that mean? How will the world get destroyed? But, like, it's not hard for us to imagine, unfortunately, right now. I mean, literally, the world could be destroyed today, and it wouldn't even be that surprising, unfortunately. We hope it doesn't happen, but I'm just saying, like, the horrible things that happen in the world. So anyways, that's one opinion, that the world will last 6,000 years and then spend 1,000 destroyed. By the way, it doesn't say and then spend eternity destroyed. It just says then it will spend 1,000 being destroyed. Okay, we're going to come back to that. As it says in Isaiah, V'nizkav Hashem levad b'yomahu, God will be alone on that day. Alone meaning once the world's destroyed, God's alone for a little while. Abaya Amar, but Abaya said, another one of the rabbis said, Trei Charuv. No, it'll be for 2,000 that it'll be destroyed, as it says, Yichyenu miyomayim biyom hashlishi yakimenu v'nichye lefanav. Okay, that's an opinion that it'll spend 2,000 years destroyed. Okay, now we're coming closer to our quote here. Tanya Kavasti the Rev Katino. There's another opinion that's similar to that. It says, Kishem shahashviz mishametes shana achas lezayin shanim. Just like Shemitah, we have a Shemitah process. If any of you have been to Israel in the last number of years, you might have seen this concept that farms can be plowed and worked for 6 years, and then the seventh year they have to lie fallow. That's called the Shemitah year. So the Talmud is saying, just like agriculture by Jewish law, and actually the truth is many in many communities, has to have 6 years of being worked and then 1 year of being let to lie fallow, so too the world will have 6,000 years of being worked, so to speak, and then 1,000 of lying fallow, whatever that means exactly. Mishamete shana achas azayin, kacha olam mishamet elef shanim. So too the world will have 1,000 years of Shemitah. Seems to imply some kind of destruction. The Shivas Alfei Shana. Shneimar v'nizkav Hashem levad b'yomahu. Okay, so that's what, and then it says what now we have on the page here. So that's the background. Then it says, now if you go to your page here, we all have this. It says, Tana Devei Rabbi Eliyahu. It said in the school of Rabbi Eliyahu, Sheshes Alfim Shana, for 6,000 years, Havi Alma will be the world. Shnei Alfim Tohu, there will be 2,000 years of just kind of chaos. That's also from the creation story, right? There, first where the world was Tohu Vohu. Shnei Alfim Torah, 2,000 years of the transmission of the Torah. Shnei Alfim Yumos Mashiach, and then 2,000 of the Messianic period. Of Ube Avonosenu, and in our sins, Sherabu Yatsu Mehem Mashiyatsu. And because of our many sins, what has happened has happened. Now, the 2,000 of Tohu, how did I translate Tohu? It's of chaos, right? How did you translate it here? Dissolution. I think chaos is, you know, if we look at the calendar of our history, so to speak, 2,000 years would have been from Adam until Abraham was in his 50s. And that's when the Talmud says Abraham began teaching the concept of monotheism. That until then, there was a certain chaos. Doesn't mean that the world was just in chaos, like everyone was just like freaking out in chaos. Just means that the world, there wasn't really structure. There wasn't order yet. There was still a sense of confusion. And then there started to be a period of understanding, the oneness of God. That starts with Abraham. And then obviously that goes through to Moses and the Torah. And then that ends 2,000 years. By the way, that ends, if you count the 2,000 years on the Jewish history, with the destruction of the Second Temple. So that, and that ends the kind of, that's well after the last book of the Bible, of the Torah, of the Tanakh. But it ends with like the period of the Torah. And then for 2,000 years, you have the Messianic era, which means the possibility of the Messiah after 2,000 years. Right?
Three chunks of two.
That equals the 6,000. So that's a little different, by the way, than what we saw before. Because we saw before that there's this concept of 6,000 years and then a new era. This is sort of saying there was 2,000, and now we're in the next 2,000. But
it doesn't mean the Messiah will come.
No.
Until the end of that 2,000.
It could be that it's at the end.
Still at the end of the
and then that fits in with the previous teaching. Or it could be that some point within there the Messiah comes. But yes.
What is the definition of the world? Is it the planet? Human beings?
Seems to be that it's human civilization.
Human civilization.
Right. Which, by the way, it's not crazy to say that it's about 5,000 to 6,000 years old. That's a pretty common understanding of how long human civilization has lasted. Some would argue that Adam getting a soul was at the point in evolution when Adam became human. Adam, meaning all humanity, but became, in the evolutionary process, a human being as we know it today. And that's been about 5,000 to 6,000 years. But that's human, yeah.
So what about like the entire universe?
That's something else. Because we also have I actually think I have it here, actually. We're going to see it at some point. There is also a belief that, like, for example, there were 6,000 planets, civilizations created by God, and each one destroyed until it got to this one. We're going to come to that in a minute. In fact, let me read to you another piece that the Talmud says that, the Pirkei Derabbi Eliezer, the Midrash, says something very similar. In fact, it's exactly what you just mentioned. I'll read it to you because I just printed it out right before the class. It says, Shiva Olamos Baruch HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God created seven worlds, whatever that means. I don't know if it's planets or worlds. Umikulam lo bachar ela olam hashvi. And then only chose the seventh. The seventh after, whatever this means. It doesn't mean, we have to understand this on a deeper level. I'm not smart enough to understand it. But it doesn't mean that God, like, it's like playing Legos. Like, God built it. It's like, oh, this doesn't work. I'm going to destroy it and build another one. Something deeper is being expressed here about, maybe it's about the people like that were created that weren't able to. I'm not sure what it means actually. I shouldn't even guess because it's something deeper than I understand. But something about the world being created and then being destroyed, and now we're in the seventh one, which we hope is like the ultimate one. Now, of course, that's what we hope. It's not going to be the same as the previous that didn't go so well. But that's so. It says seven worlds God created and only chose the final one. Shisha, let's say so lavo. There was six. There's sheets there in the back. There was six worlds to come and go. Ve'echad shekulo Shabbos, and then finally the Sabbath. Umenuchala chaya olam haba. Now, in this perspective, the previous one we saw was that the seventh millennium is the Shemitah cycle. The I don't know how to even say that in English, but the years of fallow after the 6 years of working the land. In this perspective, the Pirkei Derabbi Eliezer, it's the Sabbath. There's the 6 days of creation, or the 6 days of the work week, and then the seventh day, that's the Sabbath. And that the Messianic era is somehow the Sabbath. And that's the truth is with things we believe in the Messianic era, you know, the idea of world peace and, you know, health, things like that. Like, there is this understanding that it's like a peaceful time. So that's... And this, by the way, gets into why we're talking about now, if this Messiah can come, Mashiach can come, in the last 2,000 of the six, part of the idea might be, and many have suggested, we're going to come back to this also, but could be that before Shabbos begins, you know, it's customary to begin Shabbat early, to start, and so maybe Messiah could come a little bit before Shabbat. By the way, if you do the math, I told you that 0 to 2,000 was Adam to Abraham. So that was a certain aspect of chaos, something chaotic about it. Then you had Abraham to the destruction of the temple by the Romans, the second temple in 70 CE, about there. That's Torah. That's when the Torah is being given and expressed and taught. Then you have 2,000 of Messianic era. Maybe I'll come to this in a little bit, but maybe I'll just say it now. Rabbi Kaplan, it's not on the sheet here, but Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan says that there was a tradition that the Messiah would come before the year 6,000. So that's because that's not till 2240, right? We still have a little bit of time. Maybe we'll live to see the day, but extremely unlikely. It's just that if certain medications and drugs, you know, some of the work you're doing over there in the Davis building can give incredible longevity. And that's some of the new things. We're going to talk about this, by the way, because I want to talk about this in a future class. I really want to talk about this. I've been thinking about it a lot. You know, one of the newest innovations this past year are this dog medicine to enable dogs to have incredible longevity, because they've identified certain genes within dogs that cause them to age and die, and they're now able to reverse those genes. Anyways, there's something a lot to talk about with longevity, and that's for another discussion. So we probably won't see it. But anyways, if this concept that the world will last till 2240, but that the Messiah will come before that, because Shabbat begins before that. So there was a tradition that the last 500 years is when the Messiah will come, of those 2,000. So meaning the last 500 years before 6,000. So from 5,500 on, which is why you've had so many people predicting the Messiah in recent years, which we're going to talk about today also, which has caused problems. But there was one tradition that Rabbi Kaplan writes about, that it would happen after 200 years into those 500, which is actually comes out to about 1940, in that ballpark, 1940 to 1950. So that's why he argued there were some that argued that the creation of the state of Israel was somehow that, which we talked about last week, and that also was extremely controversial. But anyways, having said all that, let's just go into that. That's the background for this. But let's turn the page and talk about one last piece. They're on the back, Paula. The sheets are on the back as we walk in. And then I want to hear your comments. But so he says that some understand that this is based on the parallel between the days of creation and days of the world. And that's why we have this whole thing about the shot, about it being the Sabbath. That's what the Ramban writes. In the footnote there on the top of page 590, the Ramban writes, when the Torah said, Asher bara Elokim la'asot, God created the world to do it. He says, Vada ki nichla od b'milat la'asot. When it says la'asot, God created the world to do it, means, ki sheshes yimei breishis heim kol yimos olam. The 6 days of the creation were the 6,000 years of the world. Ki kumo yiyet sheshes alfei Shana. There was 6,000 years of creation, just like there were 6 days of creation. And then before then will be the Messianic period. There is, just to conclude this discussion and hear your comments, and then I want to go into one more thing that's like the main thing that I want to talk about. But there is also this interesting Zohar. The Zohar is on the sheet there on 591, footnote 25. The Zohar, the text of, you know, Jewish mysticism, Kabbalah, it says, in the 600th year of the 6,000th millennia, so this is about the year 1840, right? The gates of wisdom on high and the wellsprings of lower wisdom will be opened. This will prepare the world to enter the 7,000th, just as humans prepare themselves towards sunset on Friday before the Sabbath. So 1840, by the way, that's a really popular podcast right now, because it's the idea that in the 1840s, and I don't remember off the top of my head, but there were a number of very great thinkers born in that decade, and also interesting books written in that. Like, there was all of a sudden a certain enlightenment or new perspective on the world that happened at that time. That's what the Zohar seems to predict. But the Ben Ish Chai, to quote one last source, a great Iraqi Sephardic rabbi, says that it has to be before the year 6,000. It's not that we're going to get to 6,000 and then the Messiah comes. It has to be before then. And he argues that the reason is, we'll just read it real quick. It says in the bold there in footnote 26, he says, when it says, HaKetz shall be ita. Remember we talked about last week, be ita acheshana? At its proper time, it will come quickly. I mean, we talked about, what does it mean? Will it come at the right time or will it come quickly? And we said, if we earn it, if we deserve it, it will come quicker. If we don't deserve it, it will come later. So he says, what is its time? Muchash ye kodem kamashanim. It has to be before then. It has to be before the final time. Misofa elef hashishi she'imhu besofa elef hashishi. Because it comes at the last of the years. Mamash imkein nimsa yeduahu umahu inyan stimos haketz. Then everyone will know it's about to happen. And that can't be based on our tradition of how it's going to happen. It can't be that we all expect it, which would be very scary. If we get to year 6,000 and everyone's expecting it, because we know there's been horrible things that horrible cults have done when they expect the certain year to be the end, the final year. So he argues that it has to happen beforehand. Though I will point out, and then I really want to hear your comments and questions before we do one last piece. I will point out that Dr. David Berger wrote an article in Tradition about 15 years ago, and he wrote the following. I'll just read to you what he wrote, which I think is interesting, because people keep talking about this year 6,000. I mean, imagine, like I said, we're unlikely to any of us be alive in that year. I hope this is not depressing you too much, but we're unlikely to be alive. But imagine being alive at that time when it's like, oh, we've been talking for thousands of years about how it has to happen by the year 6,000. And like right now it's 5999. It's literally Y6K, right? It's like, remember how we were freaking out in Y2K? So it'll be like Y6K is like even, and everyone will be watching, like, what's going to happen to the Jews? Like, they're all freaking out. Hopefully the Messiah comes before then and we don't have to worry about it. But like, you can imagine that it could be like a scary thing, and hopefully the rabbis at that time will be responsible. Dr. David Berger writes as follows. I'm going to read you what he writes. He says, I'm more than a bit disturbed when respected Orthodox organizations disseminate, he's an Orthodox Jew himself, he's not making fun, but he says, disseminate material stating as undeniable fact that the redemption must come before the year 6,000 in the Jewish calendar. Other Messianic dates in the Talmud have passed. And Maimonides, in an explicit effort to discourage messianic calculation obsession, made a point of emphasizing that even Chazal did not have a tradition regarding these matters. Remember the Rambam last week. In fact, I'll read it to you again, because I think it's important when we talk about these predictions of when the Messiah will come. The Rambam said clearly, that we read last week, Elu hadavarim kiyotavim lo yodea adam ech yu achiyu. We do not know how they will happen until they happen. This is not something that we're supposed to focus on. He says, Shadavarim stumim heim etzon nevim. These were even hidden from the prophets. They didn't know when it was going to happen. Gam hachachamim, even the great rabbis. Ein lehem kabbalah b'devarim elu. They do not have a tradition about when the Messiah will come exactly. El lefi hachreya hapsukim. We just have some verses in the Torah that we can try to infer from. Lefikach yesh lehem machlokas b'devarim elu. That's why there was a lot of disagreements and different opinions. This is just one opinion. Val kolpanim ein sidur havios devarim elu velo dikdukeim ikur b'das. And this is not the essence of our religion, to be focused on these issues of when's the Messiah going to come. This is like fun, interesting side things to have, talk about and discuss, but it's not the focus. Le'olam lo yis'asek adam b'divrei ha'agados. We shouldn't really spend our time spending too much time on this. Lo yarech b'midrashos ha'amoris b'nyanim elu, and not spend a lot of time like analyzing this even. Lo yisimam ikra, and do not make them the main point of our focus, of our religion, because they don't lead to love and fear and goodness. So the Rambam writes this. So then he goes on, Dr. Berger. Many years ago, a friend told me how a classmate of his in a traditionalist yeshiva had told him that if he would be alive in the year 6000 and the Messiah would not have come, he would throw his tefillin on the ground and stomp on them. See, this is the danger of these things, because you start to think like, oh, God must bring the Messiah by this year, and if not, I don't believe in God anymore. As if there's some kind of promise that we have directly from God, this is how it's going to be. It's just kind of a hope, an anticipation. But so this guy told him, if it doesn't happen, I don't believe in God anymore. I'm going to throw my tefillin on the ground and stomp on him. So he says, it's worth reemphasizing the prophet's declaration. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are my ways your ways, declares the Lord. But as the heavens are high above the earth, so are my ways high above your ways, and my thoughts above your thoughts. So that's a little bit about this concept. We're going to go more into it, but what are your reactions, comments? Yeah.
I have a question. So the Messianic age is what, that the Messiah has come and,
yeah,
and everything. Now, does that end also? So the Messiah...
Well, that's... So we spent time talking about that in the last few weeks. Oh. There's different opinions. Some say when the Messiah comes, that's it. It's a Messianic era. Some say that's just a temporary period before Olam Haba, the world to come, and the resurrection. There's a lot of disagreements. Again, we're not sure. We don't know about this stuff. All we know is what we have in front of us. All these spiritual, mystical things we're just kind of guessing and talking about. But
the metaphor, which is so powerful,
yeah,
the idea that things recycle. I love the idea of Shabbat and the fallow year are the same thing.
Right.
But all life regenerates. I mean, there was a time hundreds of millions of years ago when everything got killed on the planet. There was a show on television that I was so fascinated, but all life forms was wiped out.
Well, that could be.
And then regenerated.
Right.
And then.
That's what that piece in the Talmud seemed to imply at first, but that's not what we mean when we talk about the Messianic era as a time of being universal goodness and kindness and knowledge and like. I don't know if we imagine it being a time when just everyone's just dead.
I don't think that's the Messiah. No, I don't think that either.
Right.
But I mean, life.
Of course, we can imagine it. You know, the world. It's like that movie, Don't Look Up. Also, remember, Don't Look Up. Also, and if you didn't see it, you should see it. Actually,
but
it's a good movie.
Maybe it will be animals. Maybe they'll be nicer to one another.
Yeah. Maybe. Any other comments to this? Yes. Right. Right, you're supposed to be wanting it and trying to make it happen, but not focusing on it. Because the way we make it happen is by being kind to others, by making the world a better place. So that's good. Like in the meantime, do good things, and we have this like promise that it will ensue, but it's not.
We don't need to calculate how.
Right, and it leads to lots of problems. In fact, let's look at one last piece. Because it's really dangerous, and we know throughout Jewish history, messianic movements have tended. Maybe I should even say always ended bad. So, for example, and look at the rabbis didn't like it. So let's just conclude with this. On 591 here, for example, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, same place. It says there, Amar Rabbi Yonasan, Tipach Atzman Shal Mechash VeKetzin. May the bones of those who predict when the Messiah is going to come explode. Shayu omrim kivan shigia es hakeitz, because they're going to say, we are there, it's time. V'lo ba, but it didn't happen. Shuveinu ba. So now I don't believe in anything anymore. Just like this story was saying. Ela chake lo shenemar im yisamameya chake lo. You're supposed to anticipate it and want it to happen, but not be trying to constantly predict it. The Talmud says elsewhere. Another quote. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Hanosein es hakeitz. If someone says, this is the year the Messiah is going to come, meaning predicting a certain year is going to happen in 2025, whatever. If they say that, Ein lo chelik le'olam haba. They have no portion in the world to come. Another place, look at the Rambam, Maimonides says. He says, V'chein lo yechshav hakeitzim. You should not predict when the end is going to be. Amr chachamim tipach rucham shel mechash v'keitzim. The spirit of those who predict when the Messiah will come will explode. Ele yechake v'yamin v'chlal hadavar kamosh v'yarni. You should just kind of believe in the general idea and always hope for it. Now, this is in a letter. Now, the Rambam, being in Egypt, great rabbi in Egypt, we know that we have some of his letters to Jewish communities around the world, especially to Yemen, a very ancient Jewish community in Yemen. And he wrote them a number of letters. They were dealing with the false Messiah in Yemen at the time. So he wrote them a letter. Look at what he writes in this letter. We have the English of it here. His epistle to Yemen. He says, Igeres Teiman, is how we call it in Hebrew. In your letter, he says, you have referred to the computations of the Kates and Rabbi Sajja's opinion on the subject. Apparently, Rabbi Sajja Gon had predicted a certain year that the Messiah would come. And so the people in Yemen said, if the Sajja Gon did it, we could do it too. We have a prediction about when the Messiah is going to come. And so how can you tell us not to if this great rabbi, Rabbi Sajja Gon, did it? So he responds, he gives a couple of different responses. He says, first of all, you must know that no human being ever will be able to determine it precisely. As Daniel already explained, for the words are shut up and sealed. Indeed, many hypotheses were advanced by scholars who fancied that they had discovered the date, as was anticipated by Scripture. Many will run to and fro, and opinions shall be increased. And Daniel also. That is, there should be numerous views concerning it. Furthermore, we have divine communication through the medium of the prophets that many people will calculate the time of the advent of the Mashiach, but will fail to ascertain its true date. So we know that people are going to predict it, and we know they're also going to be wrong. We are cautioned against giving way to doubt and distrust because of these miscalculations. The rabbis invoked God to frustrate and destroy those who seek to determine precisely the advent of the Mashiach. So even God's trying to mess up our calculations because they're a stumbling block to the people, and that is why they uttered the imprecation, may the calculators of the final redemption come to grief. As for Sajja Gon's messianic calculations, what about him? How is he allowed to do it? There are extenuating circumstances for them. He had a certain reason. Though he knew they were disallowed. He knew they wasn't supposed to do it, but he did it for a certain reason. Why? For the Jews of his time were perplexed and misguided. The divine religion might have disappeared had he not encouraged the I don't even know this word, pusillanimous and diffused, disseminated and propagated by word of mouth and pen, a knowledge of the Torah's underlying principles. He believed, in all earnestness, that by means of the messianic calculations, he would inspire the masses with hope for the truth. Verily, all his deeds were for the sake of heaven. Consequently, in view of the probity of his motives, which we have disclosed, one must not decry him for his messianic computation. So he was allowed to do it. By the way, since then, there's been many rabbis who did it, and they, like Shabtai Tzvi, it led to horrible, horrible situations, and was really a bad thing. But here's the thing. Here's what's interesting. So the Rambam wrote in this letter, do not predict. It's wrong to predict. We have all these reasons why you shouldn't be predicting the number. And many rabbis did it, and it led to, you know, loss of faith and all kinds of horrible things that have happened. Now, what's interesting is, look at this piece here. Despite Rambam's warning against calculating the Kates, the end, he seems to offer one himself. But relating a family tradition that prophecy will be restored by the year 1210. Look at what he writes here. This is a quote from a letter the Rambam wrote. He says, the precise date of the Messianic Advent cannot be known, but I am in possession of an extraordinary tradition that I received from my father, who in turn received it from his father, going back to our early ancestors who were exiled from Yerushalayim, from Jerusalem, and were mentioned by the prophet in the verse, and the exiles of Yerushalayim that are in Spain, which is where Maimonides was originally from before he was exiled. According to this tradition, there's a covert indication in the prediction of Bilam, in the Torah to Bilam, to the future restoration of prophecy in Israel. He goes on in this letter. To come back This is it. This is in the collected letters of Maimonides. To come back to Bilam's prophecy and the verse, after the lapse of time, one will tell Yaakov and Israel what God has wrought. That verse contains a veiled allusion to the date of the restoration of prophecy to Israel. The statement means that after the lapse of an interval equal to the time that passed from the 6 days of creation to Bilam's day, so if you add up those years, seers again will tell Israel what God has wrought. That was what Bilam was hinting to, Rambam writes. Now, Bilam uttered his prediction in the 38th year after the Exodus, which corresponds to the year 2485 after the creation of the world. For the Exodus took place in the beginning of the year 2448. According to the interpretation of this chronology, prophecy would be restored to Israel in the year 4970 after the creation of the world. That's 1210 CE. It is doubtless true that the reappearance of prophecy in Israel is one of the signs betokening the approach of the Messianic era, as intimated in Scripture, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth before the great and terrible day of God comes. This is the most genuine tradition concerning the Messianic advent. We are admonished against and strictly prohibited from blazoning it abroad, lest some folk deem it unduly postponed. We already have apprised you concerning it, but God knows best what is true. How did Maimonides write this? Granted, it was in a private letter to someone, not in a public kind of statement or in his books. But how did he say this after all we just read, that he himself told people, do not predict the end. Don't do this. It's going to be in 1210, but don't predict when it's going to happen. How did he do that?
Well, at the end he wrote, but God knows what is best.
Good. True. He himself says, okay, we have a tradition. It's some tradition, but I'm not saying it's going to happen. God only knows. Yeah. So that's, okay, that's a good answer.
I'm trying to say, he's like saying he has a prediction, maybe like the rabbis and the Talmud did, but he's not saying mine is for sure.
Right. He's not certain about it. He's just saying, we don't know. We don't predict these things. We have some tradition that maybe the year 1210, but you know, only God knows. Right. That's a good way to couch it. Yeah, Paula.
Maybe he was trying to give
right.
And he's trying to do that. And also, he was the Rambam.
Well, yes, okay, he was the Rambam. So, interestingly, maybe what he answered about Sajagon is true for himself, meaning he said Sajagon had a reason why he did it. In his generation, certain people needed to hear that, and it was okay. Maybe he had the same thing. And maybe, because he didn't tell it to everyone, maybe just that one person he was telling it to, that person needed to hear it. He didn't know that in Cedar Sinai, 1,000 years later, they're going to be reading his letter in English to 40 people or whatever. He thought, okay, this is a private letter to one person. Who gave permission for? He didn't know he's going to be so famous anyways. Well, maybe he did, but okay. So, but I'm just saying that, yes, he didn't publicize this. Maybe there was a reason why he told that one person, and that was excusable. Yeah. It was a letter.
No, but I meant in terms of just all of this information, the spread of Judaism, the understanding, when all the other crap that fills our lives was gone. You know,
yeah.
People were just,
they had teachers. They had teachers and people that traveled to communities.
Right.
And
so I could understand where having a thought of the future and having, would be something that would be stimulating and fulfilling in a certain way.
Right.
You know, prior to lotteries.
Right.
So, you know,
right. He gives two answers here, Rabbi Shilat. And I'll just conclude with this. I'm sorry, we're in a little overtime. He says, Rabbi Shilat suggests two answers. Firstly, Rambam's calculation relates to the restoration of prophecy. If you notice, in the letter, he was primarily talking about prophecy, not to the coming of Mashiach. He does mention Mashiach in the letter, but he's primarily saying, when will there be prophecy again? The traditional Jewish belief is that Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, the final prophets of the first temple, you know, 500 years before BCE, it was the end of prophecy. So, but will there ever be prophecy again? So maybe he was saying, yeah, around this time, maybe there'll be prophecy again. In fact, maybe even it was him, right? But not the coming of Mashiach. Or maybe the Rambam felt he had a dispensation based on the exegesis of the time, just like Rasajagon. Presumably he felt that the desperate and downtrodden situation of the Jews in Yemen justified a partial abrogation of the law. And so this is why he shared that. But anyways, the main point of what we're saying here is that we're not supposed to be predicting the end. It's very dangerous. We're supposed to just be trying to make the world a better place. We have these concepts of what's going to happen, and it's interesting and maybe scary. Maybe it should motivate us and say, like, we only have so many more years to make the world a better place. I think it's obvious kind of things with like climate change and nuclear warfare and things like that, that the world is in peril. But like it should just be a motivation to us to try to make the world a better place, just like the motivation when we recognize our own mortality of our own lives. And we say, you know what, I only have 70, 80, 90 years, whatever it is on this planet. I better make the most of it. So too, we should recognize that our planet, as we know it, only has so many years, and therefore we should be trying to make the most of it, try to make the world a better place and heal the world and ensure survival into that millennium. And that's the idea here. But I just think it's interesting to discuss, even though we shouldn't discuss too much, as the Rambam warned us. So that's today's...